What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast. This is episode 104, and it's been a minute. Still, though, this episode is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon. It helps us out, keeps the podcast rolling. Of course, with us today is Bob. What's up, Bob?
What's up, man? It has been a minute. It's been a nice minute, though,
I would say. It's summertime, right?
Yeah, well, you, of course, are moving. Well, we're in the process of moving, so you moved into a new house, which meant you were very busy. And then it's like the first time I think I've taken a week-long vacation and actually, I mean, I did some work, but I was, like, legit on vacation.
Mostly disconnected.
Yeah, mostly disconnected. Actually, my phone broke, so I was, like, really disconnected.
Right. Yeah.
Which was such a weird feeling. While I did have a backup phone, I didn't really use it.
Because Bob doesn't know how to use Android.
Well, and it was an Android phone. But no, my iPhone broke. So I went to Lake Norman. It's like big wakeboarding, boating trip that I went on. And halfway through the week, my phone got wet and it wouldn't charge. So I just turned it off. Because an Apple store was like an hour away. And I just didn't want to... I didn't want to lose a day because it's going to take a day to go get it fixed, whatever. You know what I mean? I didn't want to lose a day.
Yeah,
so I just decided to just turn it off, which was fine, which was actually nice. Like, just being disconnected was very cool.
I'm not anti-technology. Obviously, this is a weekly tech podcast, right? But I do believe in, like, vacations from technology.
If you can afford to, do it. Yeah. I think we take it for granted, right? Because we're always connected, especially now, like, we're... your phone, you have everything. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Facebook, whether it's just a normal phone and talking to people, the internet, email, like we do it all on our phone and it's with us 24/7. So you don't realize like how nice it is just to not wake up and check messages or check how many people liked your picture or whatever it is. It's just like
start to just live off away from it.
Yeah, to fully disconnect was actually nice, and obviously being on vacation was nice as well. So I kind of had that like whole kind of like I guess you would call it like a breather from technology.
No, yeah, and I think especially since we work in it and we're so connected and we're so immersed in it, and that's great. You know, we chose this, but it does help to just take a little break, a little breather.
Yeah, it was really really interesting too because I've never fully disconnected. You know what I mean? Like, I've gone on vacations, but obviously I still have my phone. Like, to fully disconnect, I think even taking a weekend and just shutting off your phone, I would highly recommend it. So that's what we've been up to. So there's been a lot of stuff that we've covered over the past couple weeks that I definitely want to dive into because it's been a pretty big deal. And like any launch, there's been issues and there's been problems with a lot of different things. I don't think any CPU launch that I've covered in the past 3 years has gone like perfectly, I would say.
Right.
So we'll talk about the Core i9 series processors and the new Core i7 7740X, which both I reviewed before I went away. And these are very interesting processors. We'll start with the Core i9. That's a Core i9 7900X, which is a 10-core processor from Intel. It is their first 10-core consumer-based processor. So I think the big thing with these Core i9 parts is they're kind of a response to AMD. I mean, I don't think... For the longest time, we saw Intel just kind of have, they weren't pushing the core counts at all.
They didn't need to.
And I think with Ryzen coming out, and obviously we have Threadripper coming later, that these core counts are important. And I think that with so many programs these days and programs that we all use, like Photoshop and everything being multi-threaded, having those extra cores is extremely important. And not only for an enthusiast, but even for a normal person, I think having more cores is more important these days. So I think that it's about time that
it certainly is. Not only for what's out there, what's already written, but for what can be written. as far as multi-threaded, multitask programs. This will allow for much, much more efficient software. And, I mean, it's just nice to see Intel have to push out some solid products.
Yeah, so as it stands right now, this processor is out, and it is the current available flagship. So what that means is it's the highest available.
Time to get confused.
Yeah, it's the highest available high-end desktop part from Intel. So just going through the specs quickly, it has a base clock of 3.3 gigahertz, and then it boosts all the way up to 4.3 gigahertz. And then there has this new Turbo Boost Max technology, which will boost two of the cores even higher. So two of the cores can boost up to 4.5. Obviously, 10 core, 20 thread, 13.75 megabytes of L3 cache, and then you do get the full 44 PCI Express lanes. 140 watt TDP, and all of that for basically $1,000, $999.
So this is essentially where, you know, you used to jump into high-end desktop price-wise, and sounds like it's going to be performance-wise kind of where you jump in at.
This isn't the starting point. Wow. The old starting point would have been the current Core i7-7800X. That is the lower end. That's like kind of like the old, what was it, the 6820? I can't even remember. There's so many of these. But, you know, their old high-end desktop were three parts, right? You had the 5820K, and then you had the... Yeah. You know, and as you would go up, this would be the top dog. So this one would,
but price wise, wasn't always about $1,000 to jump into high end desktop.
No, you're looking at around $600 to jump in for the one that had the 28 PCI Express lanes, blah blah blah. That would be around between $500 and $600.
Okay, just remembering it correctly. Yeah.
So. As it sits, the Core i9-7900X available right now is the current flagship. It's the highest processor you can get. But in an interesting, very interesting twist, I would say, for consumer-level products, is that this Core i9 series will start there at the 10-core 20-thread and will go all the way up to an 18-core 36-thread part, which should come out later this year. And that part is the i9-7980XE, and that comes in at $2,000.
So nearly twice the part for twice the money.
Correct. it's weird because that high of a core thread part does not seem like because high-end desktop, while it is enthusiast, it's a consumer part.
Yeah.
That just seems a little out of hand for a consumer part, in my opinion.
It's kind of questionable as to what is going to actually take advantage of that on a consumer level.
And, I mean, as a consumer, most people, if they're building a high-end PC, $2,000 is what they're spending total
For the most
on
part.
Their PC.
Yeah.
And you're just paying that just for the processor. So I just don't... I can only see this in really workstation type, you know.
There's an enthusiast level of guys that just will build the absolute, essentially most expensive machine they can. So this will definitely be bought up by those guys.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make a whole lot of overall sense, I would say. Because it's definitely more prosumer.
Yes, definitely. But just going back to the i9-7900X, it is one of the best processors I've ever tested. It is that true high-end desktop part. 10 cores, 20 threads. I mean, you can do so much with that. It beats out every Ryzen processor currently available.
Which it should.
Yes, which it should. But remember, we do have Threadripper coming. But we don't know how that's going to be. This gives you the full 44 PCI Express lanes, which you should get on high-end desktop. I don't like the 28 PCI Express lanes that you get with other high-end desktop processors in this X Series line. So you get that. quad channel memory support. I mean, you get it all with this part. This is the part, if you're building a high-end desktop system now, workstation, whatever it may be, this is the processor to get. There are a lot of great X299 motherboards that have been released and more coming. You know, this is just a great part and one that I would highly suggest. As far as overclocking goes, I was able to get all 10 cores running at 4.6 gigahertz, which is very hard to do running 100% of the time. While this thing technically can boost two cores up to 4.5, getting all 10 cores running at a higher speed is very hard. And that was on an AIO, the NZXT Kraken X52. So you can overclock, and one thing that's great about overclocking on this is that you can take advantage of some power saving features, so you can actually have the processor clock down when it's not doing anything.
Really?
Yeah. And then when it comes to overclock, it will boost all those 10 cores up. You can actually have it do that.
So essentially you can set a custom boost mode.
Basically, yes.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we've wanted this whole time.
Yeah, so it's nice that you're able to actually do that, because you don't need all 10 cores running at the highest speed that they can at all times. That's why all this power technology is built into all these processors anyways. That's what they do anyways. If you set them on auto, that's what they do.
Yeah, you just usually have to disable it because it breaks your overclock, but yes. That's really sweet because nobody needs to sit around with their, even, you know, the processor running at 5.2 gigahertz running Internet Explorer, you know.
Correct.
Correct. So that's awesome.
Yeah, so this is a really, really great part. It's a simple thing too,
you know?
Yeah, it's, I was surprised that I was able to do that. I really wasn't briefed all that much by Intel on this. It was kind of like a rush thing when they sent it to us.
Yeah.
And obviously the review is rushed as well because I left before it even went live. And I had to get all the testing done and everything like that. So, but yeah, this is, like I said, this is a great part. It is kind of the quintessential part for high-end desktop, I think. And I think that if you even look at the performance, the IPC increase and the, you know, what they were able to do, it's good. It's obviously not as impressive as Ryzen compared to Bulldozer, but that's
like a 5-star restaurant to Taco Bell.
Yeah,
AMD came a long ways. Intel is just actually giving us what we've been paying for this whole time.
Yeah, so they improved. It did the years. You have to really look at the test results, but you can see the improvement comparing. Not only multi-core but single-core performance has been improved on this. So if you look just from the previous generation, there is a single-core and multi-core improvement. Obviously, adding more cores helps that multi-core, but the single-core performance is very good as well. This is just a really great part. The only thing that makes this interesting is if you buy now, you're paying $1,000, right? And you have Threadripper coming out, which could undercut this product, and then Intel could change the price. And you have the other high-end desktop parts coming later that you may want to wait for, because, again, if Threadripper comes out and it's aggressively priced, the price of those processors might come down.
That's true.
So it's something you think about with this part. But
especially since Threadripper could be within the next few months.
Yes.
It depends on whether you need this right now, I guess, right? Which is essentially the all-time PC upgrade question. So, do you want it now or not?
So, yeah.
It doesn't really change much to me, I would say. Either you need it now and you buy it, or you are waiting indefinitely because there's always something new coming.
Yeah, I would say if you're on X99 platform, it's not needed. You could be running a 6900K and you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to... Putting on an extra $1,000 isn't going to help
it's
you.
It's not going to save you that much time.
Even if you're on X79, you could upgrade, right? If you're an X58, this is you need to upgrade. so that's what I would say. X79, probably you could, if you have the money and you're looking to upgrade, this is a great upgrade, especially if you're coming from the X79 platform, which doesn't have hardly as many features as you're going to get on the X299 platform. And obviously the performance increase that you're going to get, I forget what the highest part is on the X79 Plus. I can't even tell you. but it's far less cores and far less threads as this.
I think it's just an 8-core, isn't it?
It might be. I don't even know.
Yeah, I think it's an 8.
I'd have to go back and look. But
yeah,
so
it doesn't matter. it's not this.
X58 or X79, this is going to be a great upgrade for you, not only for the processor, but for all the extra features you're going to get with the X299 chipset. You know, your M.2 NVMe drives, U.2, all that kind of stuff, you're really going to take advantage of. So,
couple questions.
Yes.
First, as a business owner that's running prosumer parts like this instead of, you know, beyond, like somebody that's not using Xeon, and you're making money from this, do you do this upgrade or do you still wait?
What do you mean?
Like if you're using this in a professional environment.
So I'm a professional video editor.
Yeah, you're a videographer or anybody that's just chosen to, maybe your budget only allows you to run, you know, high-end desktop parts instead of Xeon. Do you do this upgrade or do you wait till Threadripper? Because you're going to make money off of it right now, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's very interesting.
Time is money.
It's a hard question. I think that a lot of people, if they're an Intel person and they've been running Intel parts, which I assume they have because AMD hasn't had anything in that, I think they would upgrade. I think if I'm a straight Intel person, even though I've heard of this Threadripper, it needs to be proven and I need to see it. And if I need to upgrade now, I'm going to upgrade to this.
Now, if you don't and it just is an investment, maybe wait and see what comes.
Yeah, I mean, that's with anything. We know what's on the horizon. We know what's coming out. So it's, you know, it's, you can wait. You can't wait, you know. But if you need it now, it's a great part. And you're going to get the performance you want out of it.
Gotcha.
Sure. So.
Last question. Do you think you'll do a single threaded overclocking session with it?
I could if
because I'm curious to see what it'll do.
Yeah, if time permits, I should do. Actually, I should do an overclocking guide completely.
Is it a bit because it does have new features?
Yeah, it's just a lot. I mean, obviously, I have a lot going on with all the reviews we have. If I'm looking beside me and I just see boxes of things that need to be reviewed.
Yeah.
But no, I would love to do that. And we have two really awesome X299 boards in right now. So maybe as I'm doing one of those reviews, I can get some overclocking single threaded and just a guide on how you should overclock on X299 anyways, for those people who are just getting into it. So I should probably write that down. that would be something cool, and I definitely want to do that. So if that comes out, everybody thank Derek for that.
I'm just curious to see, you know. Because it was always it's comparing that AMD and Intel situation again, because AMD just threw cores at stuff and Intel was just always faster clock for clock, so we never got these types of parts. So I'm curious to see if we're still getting that single core performance.
Yes.
You know, and what we can do on it.
Yeah, it will. I will keep that in mind. And as we get these X299 boards, these reviews, hopefully I'll have time to do that and see. You know what I mean?
Sweet.
Yes. So we'll talk about the other part that also came out, which obviously isn't as good of a part. It is the Core i7-7740X, and this is the Kaby Lake X part. So the i9 was the Skylake X part, and this is the Kaby Lake X part. And it's very interesting because it's the first time Intel's launched two generations of processors at the same time. So they launched Skylake X and Kaby Lake X at the same time. And as we talked about on this podcast, when this was first released or leaked, this information that they were releasing two at the same time, I was like, what? Why? my conclusion to this releasing two at once is, I guess, either two things. Here's my two theories. One, Intel wanted to say, okay, you can get into high-end desktop for $242, which is the price of the Core i5 7640X, which
the
is
lower part.
Yeah, which is the high-end desktop part. You know, you'll be on the X299 motherboard. You know,
so you'll get the board features essentially.
Yeah, and the processor's only $242.
Which is a good processor price all around.
So they can say, we have a full lineup. It starts at $242 and goes all the way up to $2,000. We have a complete lineup.
I guess it's more comparable to Ryzen.
Yeah. That's my one thing. My one,
Pro, put that in the pro column.
Well, that's just what I think they did. The other thing that I think that they possibly the reason why they're launching both at the same time is because maybe something different is coming from Intel in the future when it comes to high-end desktop. Obviously, Skylake X was done and ready to go. Kaby Lake X was in the works, you know, but when this new thing comes out in this, obviously the launch period for whatever this new thing may be, Kaby Lake X isn't going to fit into that. So they had to launch it at the same time.
I think they
need
to push it out now.
We covered an article maybe a month ago, maybe a little bit longer, on how Intel is working on a brand new architecture. Something that's not x86 based. I can't remember the article, but we talked about it.
Yeah, no, you know what? I do remember that. Yeah,
yeah, so we're talking about this new thing, this new thing.
The new.
Yeah, so that could be the reason that both are out at the same time as well.
That's a really good point. That will, it would make this Kaby Lake part obsolete before it even launched. Because who wants to run x86 when there's a new architecture?
Yeah, so whatever that may be, we don't know when that's coming out. But that's my theory on why these are released at the same time. But we'll talk about the actual part, which is the i7-7740X.
Regardless of like the future comings, is this a legit part?
It's hard for me. It's here's the thing. It's hard for me to suggest this part. And here's why. It's a quad core part, 4-core, 8 thread part.
What does that compare to?
It's $339. It's the exact same price as the 7700K.
Yes, that's.
Or it might be even cheaper. It might be slightly cheaper. I don't know. But it's in the same price range as the 7700K. Actually, right. Yeah, you're looking it up. I can hear your keyboard.
Sure am. Well, I should mention, I got off of my extremely quiet keyboard, and I am back on my Black Widow with Blues. And
nice. I'm
enjoying life again.
So the 7700K is $309.
Yep, slightly cheaper.
So the 7700K is slightly cheaper.
Same price when they were launched, though.
Yes. So this part is a little bit more expensive, but you get the X299 motherboard, right? Which are brand new and awesome.
And here, much more... built out.
Yes. But here's the thing. An X299 motherboard is going to cost you much more than a Z270 motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
With this part, the 7740X, you're only going to get dual channel DDR. So essentially, four of your DDR4 DIMM slots are unusable and it looks stupid. I have pictures of me running this thing and it just looks dumb.
Yeah.
You're only getting 16 PCI Express lanes.
That right there, I think, might be the killer.
Yeah, even if it had 28, it would be, you know, because here's the thing is that these X299 boards, they're the nice ones, the enthusiast ones, are essentially built for the 44 PCI Express lanes. So they have, you know, multiple M.2s, multiple U.2s. They have 5 PCI Express 3.0, like 16 slots to run at that, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're maxed out. The DDR, you know, they have 8 DDR4 DIMM slots. Like, this part on X299 does not make sense.
It gimps everything.
Yeah.
Badly.
Again, you know, you could say, okay, well, we wanted to get somebody, you know, we want to get people on X299 for, you know, $339.
Okay, so I'm sitting here, and the only thing I can think is that maybe you buy this if you want to upgrade, but you can't afford the whole thing all in one
That's,
shot.
Yeah.
You want a working computer. You need a working computer, but you don't want to pay that $1,000 right now. So you buy the $300 part.
Or even the i5, the 242 part.
That as well, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that you can buy other parts later, right? So you only need dual channel memory, so you don't have to buy the quad channel kit. You can buy, a dual channel kit and then get another dual channel kit, which you can, that you can buy later. You don't have to buy, So yeah, you can get into X299 for, I don't know how much, I haven't looked, but I think
a full build.
Yeah,
you're talking about a board.
A board and a processor can't be all that.
You're still going to be spending $300 on a board, aren't you?
Yeah, something like that. But again,
you're still about $1,500.
Yeah, something like that. But I think again that it does make sense that way, because a lot of people are paycheck to paycheck and they only have an extra couple $100 a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it takes them months to save up $1,000 or whatever it may be.
Sure.
So buying the $242 part and then waiting and then, then saving up $1,000, buying the other part, selling the other one, makes sense.
Which you'll recoup most of that money too, I would think.
Yeah.
You might lose, you might get $200 if you do it quick. If you do it quickly enough, I guess you should say.
Yeah, but I mean, even if you don't, you could still, but I think that's where this part makes sense. I think that if you are buying a new PC and you're looking at this compared to Z270, I think Z270 is a great platform. There's amazing motherboards out there. There's motherboards that are still being released.
They just make more sense.
It's more economical.
You're actually going to wind up with a more well-rounded system.
It's more power efficient.
Yeah. Probably, in all honesty, probably maybe even faster.
This is slightly faster.
But I mean, yeah. This is those PCI lanes, but I guess you're going to have the same thing with 7700K. So.
Yes. Yeah. But CPU performance is slightly faster. It's basically an upgrade to the 7700X or 7700K. Slight bump, 100 megahertz bump. So it's.
So give your 7700K a gigahertz overclock and you're.
Yeah. It's like I said, I think what you said as far as buying this now to get on X299 and then upgrading later does make sense, and I can see people doing it. And it's something that if I was in that position and I wanted that 10-core processor, it's something I might do because maybe I had to sell my old PC to have enough money to get this mm-hmm. in a motherboard. I think that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You would say in that situation this is a good purchase, but don't buy this because you think you're gonna do video processing faster. This is not gonna do anything for you, really.
If you're buying a brand new PC and you're looking at a Z270 system or this, mm-hmm. and you're not planning to do the upgrade as we talked about or anything like that, get the Z270 system. It's gonna have a better value. It's gonna have better power efficiency. And like you said, if you just simply overclock this, your 7700K, which is easily doable, you're gonna have just the same performance. Your board's not gonna look dumb because it only has dual channel memory, and when there's quad channel
slots, you're
probably
gonna save a couple $100 too.
You're gonna save some money. It's just
All right. Well, it's still an interesting entry.
Intel. It's different from Intel, and like I said, you guys heard my two theories on why, and this your theory, the third theory, is a great one as well. So it's just different. It's a different part. Not used to what we're seeing in the high end desktop line for sure. But right, I think
all right, Intel, we see what you're doing.
Yeah, so if you know the Core X series is completely $242 to $2,000, so there's a lot to choose from in there, and obviously each part does have its pro and con. So we'll move on from that, and we'll go to a gaming keyboard, and this is the Corsair K68, which is a mechanical gaming keyboard. And the main feature of this keyboard is that it is spill and dust resistant. And the way they've done that is they put this sort of plastic covering over the switches. So if you spill, it doesn't actually get into the switch. It kind of goes around it, which does work. And
does it?
Yeah, it does work. And it's a cool little keyboard. It's a nice keyboard. It's around $100. So, you know, a lot of times when you have spill resistance, you don't get a mechanical keyboard. It just, you don't.
I don't know if, I don't think there's one at all, is there?
I don't believe so. So this keyboard, it's a good keyboard. It has Cherry MX Red switches. It has red backlighting, which is fine for me. If you're not in the RGB, just red backlighting. But you do get those kind of, like, cool little lighting effects that you can, you know, change through Corsair's Q software. You get an included wrist rest, which is slightly comfortable. It's not the most comfortable I've used, but it is comfortable enough.
Slightly comfortable.
Yeah, and it's just like it's fashioned in the same Corsair K line, so all the K series keyboards from Corsair are pretty much the same design wise.
And same this shape is, and feel.
Yeah. So this has all of that. And it's like I said, it's around $100. So if you're going to go for an all RGB'd out mechanical keyboard from Corsair, you're looking at $130 to $160. So this is only $100. And if you don't care about RGBs, it's a great little keyboard. I'm still using it. I'm still sitting in front of me. So there's nothing really bad about it unless you want RGBs, really.
Yeah, it's funny how old school the single color board looks now.
I know, right? Because like so RGB should be a, you know, but then another
there's
thing.
Nothing wrong with a single color though.
Yeah, no, I like it. You know, just less to kind of mess around with.
Seems like a good LAN board.
Yeah, it's like, it's a
spill your beer in it.
Yeah, it's a great LAN board. You know, there's something that we kind of take for granted about durability of keyboards, because I have ruined keyboards before.
It's actually not that hard to do.
Yeah, and the thing is like, it's not like, you know, your phone where you can, like, go get it fixed. If it's broken, if it's broken by water or spilling damage, they're not going to honor the warranty.
No.
And again, if you're spending $160, I mean, some mechanical keyboards are $200.
Easy.
You good, spill once on that.
Your ducky is toast.
Yeah. You know, so that is something you definitely have to keep in mind, and I don't think enough people do, because maybe it doesn't happen as often, but it does happen.
I think you know if you need this board, right?
Yeah. I think like you said, this is a great LAN board. You're a LAN party. You may not spill something. Somebody else may do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're on a crappy folding table. It's not even flat, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a great board, and I think it's a great entry, and it does serve a purpose. You know, like I said, it's a solid board. I mean, Corsair makes solid gaming products, and this is a solid board. There's really not much wrong with it.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's just a cool little thing. And, you know, if you're clumsy, this may be the board to get.
That's what I'm saying. I think you know if you need this thing.
Like, yeah.
You've ruined a deck or two, right?
The only thing that I didn't like is that the only option is you only have the option of Cherry MX Reds. If you're a fan of browns or blues or something like that, you don't.
I don't think I would have gone with reds. I see reds used as the default often. I think blue should be the default.
Yeah, but not everybody.
It's a gaming product.
Not everybody likes that click.
Too bad.
Yeah, I mean, reds are primarily the most popular used for gaming keyboards. Obviously, with us, we do, you know, Derek and I, we do a lot of writing as well as gaming. So the blue is my favorite, but the green, I do like greens though as well.
Yeah, blacks are nice.
Yeah,
it's just I don't know, when I get on a red, it just feels limp to me. So
yeah, when I first started using this, I was like, I don't like this. Yeah.
Like yeah. when I got this blue equipped board back out, I was like, I felt like I was coming home.
Yeah. So. Blues are where
everything
it's at.
Has its place, you know. Reds sure. are quieter too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So if you're looking again for, you know, $100 mechanical keyboard, this is it. And one thing I do want to stress is it does have software, so you can remap all the keys, you can do macros, you can do all of that in Corsair's Q software, which I wouldn't say is the best, but it is one of the better softwares out there, for sure.
Yeah, it's good. It would be great if it was combined with the what is the overclocking and the monitoring?
Link.
Corsair Link? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
We just want to see the all-in-one package.
Yes. Yes, for sure. But it is good software. It's one of the top, I would say, three out there. With, I think, SteelSeries being... I would say SteelSeries might be my number one as far
really?
As gaming-related software.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes a bit of sense. SteelSeries is pretty committed to the gaming.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what other ones are out there that I've used. But that's not for game. Is it for game? Is gaming stuff?
Well, they, I guess they don't have anything for it, do they?
Yeah, no. NZXT Cam is great. It's great for system monitoring. Even if you don't have an NZXT product, it's good.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I don't know if they have gaming related stuff.
They don't have any peripherals. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah. We might see something in the future. Who knows?
Maybe it's good that they've not branched out.
Yeah.
Stick to what you're good at.
It's kind of. Yeah, getting into the gaming sphere is kind of hard. There's already immense competition, yeah. And to get a very unique part out there takes a long time. And like we said, we talked about this so many times, where there's great hardware, but then there's no software to back it up, and the amount of the cost to get software out there is probably a lot as well.
Sure. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we will move on from that to the last review that we'll talk about today. And that is the TP-Link Deco 5 Whole Home Wi-Fi system. And these systems, whether you want to call them mesh networks or whole home Wi-Fi, they're very popular. And you installed, not this one, but didn't you
yep.
install a Actually, one in your new house?
Yeah, I just installed Luma, which we met with them at CES 2 years ago. And our buddy Jack, who also has written for ThinkComputers in the past, he's run it for even longer than me. I have mixed feelings, but I also haven't had time, honestly, to fully get into it. I have some stuff I gotta mess with, so I don't even want to give you any input on or any
gotcha.
Like sort of opinion on it.
So the whole theory or the whole reason for these is that even though there's these really great routers out there, and there's some, I mean, you can spend $400 or $500 on a router.
Mm-hmm.
These routers don't always give you the best Wi-Fi coverage, and they just can't unless you have massive antennas on both your PC as well as the router, which doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and even then, you can only broadcast through so much density.
Yeah. So the idea is this, is instead of having a single router, you have multiple units or multiple nodes, which all work together to give you the best Wi-Fi signal throughout your entire home. That's basically what these do.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a really great job. Now, this unit is three little... I call them Decos because that's what the name of the product is, but three little units.
Essentially, they're routers.
Yeah, they're
each
basically...
Each one is a router, a wireless
yeah.
router. They're shaped like... Almost all of them that I've seen, for the most part, they look like a smoke detector.
Yeah, these kind of do.
Yeah.
They're
even
very
when they change
small.
The shape on them slightly, like the Luma ones, they're not circles, but they still look like smoke detectors.
Yeah.
It's about the size and shape that they are.
So basically, you set these up throughout your house in important areas where you're going to need Wi-Fi. So for me, I set one up here in the office, I set another one up in my bedroom, and then I set one up in my kitchen. And the setup for this is so easy. You don't need to be a tech person at all. All I had to do was download the Deco app on my smartphone, and then that basically guides you through the entire thing. The app even shows you how to connect the power and do all that. Like, it's really in depth in how it shows you how to do everything. So you just follow the app and go through. You obviously plug one of the units you have to plug your internet into. So whenever the internet comes into your house, I'm sure you'll have one of these units. They include an Ethernet cable. You connect that to one of these units, power them all on, and then you go through the setup process, which links them all, and you set up your Wi-Fi password and all that kind of stuff, and you're basically good to go. Setup takes, depending on how many units you're setting up, should take 15, maybe 20 minutes tops. Nice. It's really that easy. And, when it comes to performance, this isn't the fastest system we've tested, right? But if you look at our three tests through the three different areas, it gives us the best overall Wi-Fi coverage. So I live in an old apartment building, so we have like these concrete walls, which is never good for Wi-Fi.
Not at all.
And my kitchen is basically a dead zone. I would never be able to stream even audio in my kitchen at all.
Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Just for the fact that it's just a dead zone because these old ass walls.
No, yeah, they absorb.
Yeah.
Concrete brick, it will soak that signal.
Yeah, and like out. I've tested nice routers that I have here and they just don't do the job.
Yeah,
and
look through your list of tests. Like, these are legit routers.
Yeah. And as you can see in the test in the kitchen, I mean, it's just a dead zone for those other routers. It just is.
Not only that, but it looks on your testing, the zone one, which is the immediate area, right? Right near the modem?
Yes.
I would assume. It looks like it's getting smashed, right, by your other test subjects. But really, if you look at the speeds, it's about 30 megabits per second, 40 megabits per second.
Yeah.
And you're up to speeds where it really doesn't matter. Like, that much of a difference is not going... Like, it's not like you're not gaming on this, right?
Correct.
Or whatever. It's really not going to affect you. The biggest thing is that it carries that speed pretty closely all the way through all your zones.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing, is that you get better overall coverage. And I think that's important because that's something that not a lot of people think about. They think, I just want the fastest speed, you know, whatever this crazy router is. But then, you know, you... connected in your office or maybe down by your TV, and then you go upstairs to play a game on your console or whatever, and you don't have the fastest speed that you may want there.
Yeah.
You know,
almost any like a traditional American home, I mean, it spreads, there's spaces and it spreads it out, and there's just so many walls you're going through, you are going to run into dead zones. So and without some sort of a booster,
yeah,
you lose it.
Yeah, and I think the thing is too, is that even on our phones, like, you want to watch something, but then, like, if you're watching over your cell network, you're not going to get... Yeah. Like, I want to watch a video on YouTube, but I want to watch it in, like, the highest quality I can. Mm-hmm. Like, on your phone, it won't allow... Like, YouTube won't do that. You know what I mean? But if I'm connected to this and I have the highest speed, like, I can watch it the way I want to watch it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Well, not only that, but you don't want that kind of bandwidth. You will go through your data in no time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is a great system, super easy to set up. Anybody who's buying a new home, such as you, who just bought a new home, I would highly suggest a system like this over a traditional router. But there's a couple downsides. One is that each Deco unit only has two Ethernet ports.
In and out, right?
They can be used either way.
Oh, they can on that.
They're intelligent, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
That can be an issue. For me, I'm a different use case, obviously, because I have like five PCs here, but I can't connect them all via Ethernet.
No, not at all.
You know, but there are, you know, that's one downside. And the workaround is obviously get a switch, which are $20.
You can
get a 5-port switch for right around $20.
10 gigabit 5-port switch is nothing.
Yeah, which I would suggest that if you have an office or somewhere where you need that, that's like what I would do. But you know, for most devices these days, you don't need Ethernet. All laptops, they're using Wi-Fi. All the latest consoles are using Wi-Fi. You know, the only thing,
not that we should probably recommend to use Wi-Fi for gaming.
No, not at all.
Okay. Just put that out there. We're not those noobs.
No, but like I said, you do get two Ethernet ports on each one. Yeah. So depending on where you place them, you can use Ethernet and you can connect in pretty easily.
Yeah.
The second thing is, while you do get some features, which I covered in the app, you know, you can change certain things, it's not as in-depth as a normal router would be. So there's a lot of things that just aren't there, especially in, like, the Synology routers that I reviewed recently.
Oh, yeah.
Those have a buttload of features that you can set. And, you know, you just don't get that with this. But I think for the market that they're going after, that's not a huge issue. And I think for most people, even for me, I really don't change much in my router settings.
Not after your initial setups.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this the three pack, which you get the three Deco units, is $248.99.
That's a good price.
On Amazon. And that's about the price you're going to pay for a high-end router these days.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Yeah, they're good. One thing we didn't really talk about is the big thing is, because there are router packages which include a router and then a booster router, right?
Yes.
Just about every, I think I would say everybody offers that setup. The big thing is that this is mesh networking, which is a little bit different. The handoff between router is supposed to be seamless with mesh networking, and that's supposed to be the big difference.
And it is, because the way I tested was with an app on my iPhone that's constantly pinging or constantly testing the throughput of the network.
Yeah.
And as I walked through my apartment, it would drop for a second and then pick back up, and then you could see that's where the handoff was happening.
Yeah.
And it was seamless.
Yeah, because it should be checking for the strongest signal source, right?
Yes.
So as you move away from your main source or wherever you originated, as the signal weakens, it should be picking up that next signal, and it should be switching over to that stronger signal automatically.
And I thought
that's part of it.
That was the coolest thing about this product. That, like, little thing, because it's like, you know, because my kitchen is a dead zone, I have wireless extender, whatever, you know, booster. Yep. And when I went in there, I'd have to get off the Wi-Fi and then reconnect to the one that's for the kitchen. And it's just, while that's not a big deal, it's like, you know, first world problems. You know, it's yeah. The seamless, because that's what I was like, is it really going to switch to each one?
Yeah.
That's one thing I really wanted to see if it would do. And as I walked through my apartment, it would drop off as it was switching, because, you know, it's seamlessly testing. And it would drop off for a second and then pick right back up. It was really cool.
Good. I mean, that's you said first world problem. Yeah, it really is a first world problem. But to me, that sort of is, this is like the future of, like, the way we connect, right?
Yes.
It'll be nodes, you know. I think someday it'll just be nodes spread throughout our cities, and we need to be wirelessly passed from, or seamlessly passed from one to the next, right?
I mean, that's how it is now.
What it is, yeah.
So through Comcast, Xfinity, if you're an Xfinity customer, you have access to all of their...
Anybody that's mindlessly using one of their routers.
Yeah, you have access to all of their access points. And
which is just, it's just consumer or their customers using their equipment.
Yeah.
You're literally stealing bandwidth off of their customer.
Yeah. But that seamlessly passes you through.
Yeah,
thing.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is like an in-home version of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the one of my favorite things about this product. Another thing is, like, the unboxing experience of this, which is something we really don't talk about that much.
Not usually on the podcast.
Yeah, the unboxing experience of this is, like, awesome. Like, you feel like they took so much time to make these. One, they're like beautiful. These are really good looking little, I call them like little pucks. You know,
you <were. laughs>
yeah, they're like, you know, they're just really, really nice. Even the power cables are like made, like the connection that connects to the actual unit is like basically the size of like micro USB. Like it's an awesome, well-made product. It feels like an Apple product. Almost.
No, that is what it is. And yeah, Apple was the originator, but, you know, Apple, Samsung, Google does it too. Anybody that does this, they have a packaging engineering department that is very well paid.
Yeah.
And it's part of the experience.
Yeah, and, like, each one of the power adapters came in their own little box. Like, just, again, this is, you know, product can suck and then has great packaging. But, like, that as a consumer, that's part of the experience is opening
It's the product. Stepping off point, right?
Yeah. And I think TP-Link did a great job with this. And I've reviewed other products of theirs, and none of them had this kind of unboxing experience, so...
Yeah.
Very cool. Nice. Very, very cool. So, yeah. So, that wraps up. I know we took a lot of time with reviews, but we definitely want to talk about the Intel stuff. And, obviously, these two products are what we reviewed this week. So, obviously, want to talk about those as well. But we'll jump to our other stuff we have this week. And since it is the beginning of the month, we have our worst PC setups from last month, which is June. And I have to say, there are some very good entries. So the worst PC setups is where we go out and find some of the worst PC setups out there. People who are moving. Maybe Derek had a worst PC setups for a couple weeks.
No, you don't know. No PC setup.
People
even worse than all these.
Yeah, or people who are just messy and don't know how to clean or just make the most of what they have. And it's really kind of cool to see some of them. And the one picture that we featured was this monitor that's kind of being held on this, looks like a children's desk by duct tape.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. And it's up on a book. It's up on books. Like,
it's
I
not
don't...
even a monitor. It's an old TV.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. It's old Vizio TV. This thing's garbage.
Yeah. But like I say, it shows how people, they want to either get online or they want a game. And this kind of shows what people, the lengths that people go to.
To be honest, they're probably better than me at games. So.
Yeah, Derek isn't very good at games.
What? No. Whoa. Here I am trying to pay these guys a compliment, and you go all the way to, I'm not good at games.
Derek isn't good at games. We've come to that conclusion many times.
I'm not great.
You only play one game.
I don't even play that game anymore.
Yeah, I know. You play that. What's that new one called?
Well, I've been playing PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, but I'm going to move on. I'm going to play Watch Dogs 2, I think.
Okay, that has really good reviews, so.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, definitely check that article. Yeah. Really funny. Definitely cool to check out. And then we have Case Mod Friday. And this week we have the Cosmos 2 25th Anniversary Edition, which by itself is an amazing case, which I got to see at CES and not talk about it. And this one is done by AK Mod, and he actually submitted this, so shout out to him, because we don't get a lot of submissions for these. I have to go out and find them. So shout out to him for submitting this, and he did this build for Cooler Master for their Computex 2017 booth, and it's just a solid build. It's just clean and nice. And one thing not sure if you realize this is that the reservoir is kind of built into the motherboard tray beside it, and he uses black and white coolant, which you can't see because he has the
he did.
Chrome tubing.
Yeah, he did use chrome tubing.
Yeah, which I like.
With
this chrome
build. Blacks too.
Yeah,
but that's not always the point though, because just using colored coolant or dye, you know, it changes the color of your reservoir, so that's a big part of it too, even if that's the only part that you're changing.
I think about
all aspects.
I really like that because it's something that if you look at this quickly, you don't even see. Like I did, like the first time I looked at it, I didn't even see the reservoir. I was like, where's the reservoir that he's talking about?
It's a custom built motherboard tray.
Yeah.
You know what I really like, actually? And you won't not notice these, but on the front of it, you might not look closely enough. There are a couple of pieces of fitting and some hard tubing going through, and he's got some really cool cutouts on these fittings with the tubing going through. I don't know. It's just chromed out with both colors running through the only other bit, I think, of clear tubing in the build, and it's a very cool touch. I like that.
Yeah, I love
Give it some time.
I still have my Cosmos too.
Yeah.
I have a Cosmos
S2. Most
popular
case of all time, you think?
No, I wouldn't say of all time. It ranks up
it's
there.
It's up there, though, man.
It was... Okay, so...
It was the case.
Okay, I think...
Most popular high-end case. Come on.
It's up there.
Because it was always like a $200 to $300 case.
But, I mean, you still have some... Like, some of those great Lee and Lees...
No way.
Those weren't as... I wouldn't say those weren't as popular because those weren't as available.
Yeah, they were the most lusted after, maybe.
Yeah. This case was just so great because at the time when it came out, there was nothing this big and this, like, everything in this case was thought out.
Yeah.
I used this up until up until I got their Master Case 5, which that system went in there. It's just such a big case. There's so much room to work in. Obviously, with this build, you can see how much room he had for tubing and everything else.
Not only that, but I'm going to guess he's got... oh, no, there's going to be a CPU under there. Or a power supply under there. I was going to say that he had 480s in the bottom, but he's probably got two 240 radiators.
Probably, yeah, because that's what that section there fits.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah,
oh, he's got a 360 and a 240.
Yeah.
So it must be.
But this was like basically the Corsair 900D before it came out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this was probably more popular.
The reason I like this is because it had those big metal beams on the top for handles and on the bottom.
Yeah.
And this was one of the first cases that had that big door, but you could easily pull the door off the case.
Yeah.
So when you're doing a build, you didn't have this big honking door sticking up, which so many cases at that time when this originally came out did, and it was annoying to do your build because you have this big door. You know, now almost all these cases have these hinges where you can easily pull the door off. But with this one, this was like one of the first.
Yeah, back in the day, we didn't always have these fancy hinges.
Yeah. And this hinge design was actually really great, really well designed as well. I think they're the only company that I've seen use this. This is like a heavy duty hinge that's being used here, which I think a lot of people take for granted. Oh, and the other cool thing about this case is the front door. It was like that. Who did it first? I think Antec did it first on one of their 900 series cases, where the door, it like slowly would actuate down when you press down on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not remembering that.
Yeah. Those are my two favorite things about this case.
Gotcha. Sorry, couldn't add to that one.
It's a really cool feature. It's just like the doors, instead of just coming down, it just like slowly moves down.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So definitely check that out. As we always say, or as I always say, there's so many mods in our Case Mod Friday section. Unlimited possibilities of things that you can check out and see. So definitely go ahead and check that out. And we are finally to the news.
Yeah, let's crush some news here.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of news this week, and we didn't want to go back weeks and cover news, but there's a couple things. First, we have leaked 3D Mark 11 scores of AMD's RX Vega. And it actually beats out the GTX 1080, which is good.
It's good, but it's, dare I say, obvious?
It's obvious because it kind of needed to do that.
I'm not like, oh my gosh.
But the thing is, it doesn't beat out the 1080 Ti, which is a current part that's currently out. And Vega is coming out at SIGGRAPH, which, let me look at the date of that, which is like the end of August, right? Let's see. The end of July. Sorry. So we'll see, and that's when it's going to be unveiled. We don't know when it's going to be retail available.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
yeah,
very soon after that. So basically, we have another month till this comes out. But I think this is good, right? A couple things we're going to keep in mind is that this is not final drivers. We don't know if this is final speeds or anything else.
Who's the leak through?
They're really good on their leaks.
Yeah, I'm just curious who they got it from.
It's in the 3D Mark database.
Oh, okay.
And it's known that the part number, which is the 687F C1, that's known as a Vega part.
Okay, so this is an AMD leak. I'm just gonna assume.
Yeah,
I mean, it's gonna be close. The finished drivers, though.
Here's the thing that makes Vega very. We'll have to see what NVIDIA does, but again, if this, say this, because there's supposed to be three Vega parts, right? If this is not the, if this is the highest end Vega part, NVIDIA still beats them, right?
Yeah.
And NVIDIA has what, Volta coming
soon.
You know, so maybe I'm assuming we'll see Volta at CES in January.
Yeah, I'm hoping for AMD's sake that this is like their 1070 level part.
Yeah.
That gives them hope, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're behind the ball. Sorry. Unless there's another part in development that's more 1080 Ti level. But then what? So you just beat out the 1080 Ti?
It's just...
When NVIDIA still has another... They'll have their new parts coming?
We talked about this before, and I've stressed it so many times. We saw this part in January working.
Yeah, 6 months later, it's still not out.
It's still not out. It's summertime.
And it's not smashing either, right?
Yeah, and it's like, what are they doing? Like, I got the Ryzen launch. Like, they weren't going to release both at the same time, right?
Uh-huh.
But, like... Damn it. Like, we want this part.
Yeah.
Like, you want this part to be out there.
If this is high end, if this is their top, if this is actually the 1080 level part, the price better be around like $400.
Yeah.
That's the only option.
I just think that this part needs to come out, and I would hope when it comes out, it does good. Because that's what we want. I mean,
Don't take us the wrong way.
Say I hated AMD, which I don't, but if I did, I'd still want it to do good because it forces NVIDIA to do better or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
look at what we're getting, what's happening with Intel right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, my thing on this is that it just needs to come out.
Mm-hmm.
It just needs to come out. I don't care about performance. I just want the part out, and I want to see final product tests. You know, I want to see the launch day reviews. Like, I want to, you know what I mean? I want to see it all.
And when it comes out, you know what I don't want to hear? Excuses for the drivers not being mature.
Yeah. Because,
I don't want to hear it. I really don't want to hear it.
We played Star Wars Battlefront 2, the early version. Or was it?
No, it was the first one.
We played Star Wars Battlefront at 4K.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's gotta be ready. Yes. I don't wanna be like, I don't want a Ryzen situation where they're like, oh well, we're still getting the BIOS ready for gaming.
Yeah.
Nope. You launch it with
there should be no excuses. I don't software. I think I would care less about overall performance if the drivers were solid, it didn't have any other launch day issues, which we see all of the time.
Yeah.
So they've had enough time. It should be a solid launch. And maybe that's why they're waiting. I mean, who knows?
Maybe, yeah.
But that's another thing that we do take for granted is so many launches of CPUs and GPUs, there's problems that need to be fixed with products that are out there. You know what I mean?
It don't sell a product that doesn't work 100%.
Yeah, and we see that all the time. So
yeah, it's getting old.
Yeah. So talking about Vega... The die size has been confirmed, 484 millimeters squared. Raja Koduri, who is the head of the Radeon Technologies Group, kind of cryptically said that in a tweet.
Okay.
So that is a big chip compared to the RX 580. The RX 580 is 232 millimeters squared. And NVIDIA's Titan XP, which is their largest chip, is 471 millimeters squared. So this is slightly bigger than that, but it's not the largest AMD chip ever made. That was the Fiji XT, which powered the R9 Fury X. That was 596 millimeters squared. So it gives you an idea of the actual size and how it's sort of coming down slightly.
Yeah.
When it comes to these bigger chips, so... So yeah, that's pretty much all of the GPUs. Oh no, we have one more thing on GPUs, which is NVIDIA's latest drivers. We talked about this before, that NVIDIA was going to be doing this. Their new series drivers, the 384 series driver, allows you to stream Netflix in 4K without a new processor. So because of certain DRM restrictions on Netflix... for 4K, you needed a new Kaby Lake or Ryzen CPU to stream 4K content from Netflix.
Which is kind of absurd.
The new DRM stuff was built into these processors specifically for that reason. So you weren't able to do it. So what NVIDIA has done, at least on, I believe it's their 1080... 1070 and maybe 1060. I think it's just their 10 series. Is that you are now able? You don't. You know, you could be running an old processor. You could be running a 6700K or something like that, or even a bulldozer part. I don't know why, but you could be running those parts. And if you have the latest drive, NVIDIA drivers, in NVIDIA graphics card, as well as all the other requirements, which be a 4K monitor. And I forget what you need. Yeah, just basically a 4K monitor. You are able to stream Netflix, which I think is a big deal for some people, especially people who love content and love it at its full res. Like, I want to watch at four. I have bought this 4K monitor, which was expensive. I want to watch, be able to stream Netflix in 4K.
Exactly.
So I think it's cool. I think that's that opens up one more 4K content to people, streaming 4K content to people. And two, I think it's just another way to say, you know, buy an NVIDIA card. You can want, you can do this.
Just a bit more value.
And I don't know if this is an exclusive with NVIDIA. Obviously, AMD hasn't said anything about it. I know this takes a lot of time and coding and whatever they have to do it. But I think it's cool.
Yeah. No, also, it's a great value add-on.
Also, another thing about this latest driver is that it enables DirectX 12 API support on old GPUs. So, you know, basically all NVIDIA GPUs up to 5 years ago will now support DirectX 12.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
Of course, you got to be on Windows 10.
Yes. Which you should be. We'll talk about this.
Okay, we won't revisit.
Yes, we won't go into that.
What is an obvious lie.
Yeah. So... the big thing that's
been consuming the internet right now.
Consuming the world's power. the big thing that honestly everybody I know, not even PC people, are talking about is cryptocurrency. We saw it with Ethereum being like this new thing that people are making a lot of money on, and people are wondering what it is. And we saw it 3 years ago with Bitcoin, and we have Litecoin and all this kind of stuff. With Ethereum, you know, you can mine it just like Bitcoin. You can still mine it. While it might not be as profitable, you can still do it. And with Ethereum really taking off, it really brought back mining. And basically what that does is you use your GPU's power to mine for these coins or this cryptocurrency. And it's huge now. Literally everybody's doing it or talking about it or trying to make money off of it. It just seems that's what everybody's doing. And it's using the world's power, basically.
It's quit wasting.
Yeah.
It is contributing greatly to global warming is what it's doing.
Yes. So Bitcoin is responsible for 14.54. Is that – what's the T –
I would guess that's terawatt hours.
Terawatt hours, and Ethereum mining is responsible for 4.69 terawatt hour power consumption. So those numbers mean nothing to people, most people. You know, so basically, Ethereum consumes Ethereum mining worldwide consumes almost as much power as Moldova, which is the 120th most power consuming country, which has a population of 3 million. Bitcoin,
so y'all are stealing power from the poor.
Bitcoin, the power usage of 14.54 terawatt hours sits between Mozambique and Turkmenistan, which they have a population of 5.17 million people. But if you combine both cryptocurrencies and the power that they the mining, the power that it takes to mine these cryptocurrencies currently, it has a higher higher energy usage than Syria, which in 2014 had a population above 17 million.
Are we talking about pre-war Syria or current Syria?
I don't know. Okay. That's true. But 2014.
Yes. Well, population.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of power.
It's a lot of power being used.
I do want to point out, this isn't an exact comparison, because all these countries on this list are all contributing to this power consumption, because there's people in each of these, of every country on that list,
make sense.
I'm sure, that are contributing to. But it's a very interesting comparison of just how much power is being used.
there's another interesting comparison, which Ethereum mining consumes 8 times more power than it takes to run the entire Visa network, and Bitcoin is 27 times as much. So that shows you how efficient a centralized network is, where, you know, Visa network is being controlled, right?
Yeah.
You know,
which is Visa should be server based.
Yeah. So the thing is you have that Visa is that third party, right? So
yeah,
you know, where the blockchains are these cryptocurrency, you know, blockchain, there's no third party. It's not centralized, and it just shows you how inefficient these decentralized systems are, and how, at least in the future, they need to be more efficient somehow.
There's a lot of it's a ton of untapped and computational power, of course, or well, previously untapped, you know. But the system, the individual home PCs, essentially consumer grade products, are not designed with power efficiency in mind necessarily.
Correct.
Especially AMD parts, which are best at this.
Yes. So yes, it's kind of interesting. I think that there's a lot of really cool things with the technology that cryptocurrency is based off, with like the whole blockchain thing. I've read some really interesting articles of, you know, being able to track certain valuables, like say art, through blockchains instead of, you know, normal
methods,
records, like, you know, say. So there's really cool things being done. Obviously, cryptocurrency is here to stay. I don't see it going anywhere. But I think that's this whole power usage thing is kind of concerning.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a solid waste.
Yeah.
At a time when I don't know how much I buy into, like, I don't know. This is way off in the weeds from where we, you know, our tech podcast here. But it's we shouldn't be wasting energy, right? Whether it's available or not, we just shouldn't.
Correct.
We should try to be as efficient as we can.
Correct.
Without getting too political. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, talking about cryptocurrency, MSI has released a special BIOS for cryptocurrency mining that basically is for their 100 and 200, or no, the 100 series chipsets. Basically, the motherboard wouldn't recognize if you went higher than 4 graphics cards, I believe. Hmm. So this kind of fixes that problem, which apparently is a big problem.
This is really interesting to me. This is the one aspect of this that isn't probably really touched on very often, is that, like, these systems, they are utilizing, like, things to their absolute limit, pieces of equipment that are generally maybe lab tested to this extent, but not at this level or this frequency. And correct. It's really cool to see little things that are getting fixed that we didn't know were problems, kind of, I guess.
Yeah, that would, if this, you would have never seen that BIOS update from MSI if cryptocurrency, like, was a thing, you know what I mean?
Which maybe you might, it's like, well, who needs 6 graphics cards ever, right? Because it doesn't work for gaming or anything else.
Correct.
But maybe this is, like, pointing out some other instability or inefficiency that MSI is finding through this, and that they're fixing for future products.
Yes.
So it's cool.
Yeah, I like it. I like when we can always fix things that are problems, but it takes a big group of people, which there's a lot of cryptocurrency miners out there to do. So, but moving into consumer products, which is something that we all should be interested in, Pacer released one of the coolest looking PCI Express solid-state drives that I've ever seen. It is the Commando, the PT920 Commando, PCI Express NVMe drive, and expansion card drive. And the expansion card is designed to look like the top of like an M4, M16 assault rifle. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, it is cool.
I mean, the only reason we really covered this is just because how cool it looks, and I don't think we've ever seen anything like it before.
Not to this level, right? Well, I've seen some heat sinks, right?
Yeah.
Shaped like some bullets or whatever, but never anything quite like this.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Cool design. The drive has 2,500 megabytes a second read and 1,300 megabytes a second write, which is standard for PCI Express drives.
So it's about an average drive.
Yeah, it's not super, super high performance, but that, I mean, that's 2,500 and 1,300 are pretty much the standard for an NVMe solid state drive. So
sure. Capacities aren't super impressive.
No, 480 and 240.
Yeah.
So I think this might have been like a little tester, you know.
Yeah, see if, you know, it's probably smart because this is an awfully specific product.
Yeah, and I mean, instead of, you know, that extra whatever you want to call it, shroud, that's costs much more money to produce than just a normal PCB as well. So yeah. So that's a pretty cool product that came out. Definitely check that out. And talking about
here's one we called.
Yes. So but they're not water.
They're not water blocks.
But... they're not water blocks. So that's what you have been talking about. But EK released M.2 SSD heat sinks. They're basically heat sinks you put right on top of your M.2 SSD, and they have they come in a black and a silver version with a silver EK logo on it. I think they look good. I think they serve a function. And
they do. Yep. And they're not expensive.
Especially if you're doing a water cooled build with EK parts anyways, and to match these up.
Yeah, this is that little touch.
Yeah. So it kind of brings everything together. And what's cool is the heatsink actually goes onto the back as well. So you have that back part. So there's a heatsink on the top, but a metal piece on the back as well.
I don't know if you see that. Well, is there?
Yes, there is.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, where the clip would attach to?
Yeah.
Yep.
So that evenly distributes that heat as well. So I like it. These are basically like $15.
Yeah. 10, 15. Euro is right around the dollar right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I always just, if it's Euro, I just like it's a little bit more expensive.
Maybe like 5%. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know where it's at, but it had dropped recently. But anyways.
But yeah, so black and silver colors. Look, yeah, cool little thing. Especially if you have one of those Samsung drives.
Yeah.
Or a couple of them actually that do official. And it just looks cool. I mean, I think that I might actually buy one of these. We're doing a build here on the site, and I'm using an M.2 drive, and I might just buy one of these.
You should
do it.
They look good. It's like anything that you can dress up, you should, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because the M.2 I have here has a sticker on it, which doesn't look cool at all.
Looks horrible.
Yeah. So this is cool. I might do that.
Yeah, peel that sticker off with the warranty and stick that block on it.
Exactly. And then our final news story of the day talks about Star Wars Battlefront 2, which is not out yet, which comes out in November, which I will probably buy. Will you get it?
Maybe. Maybe.
Did you play
I played the beta.
Okay.
And I was like, well, this is a skinned Battlefield 4.
But it's Star Wars. You're like a big Star Wars guy.
I love Star Wars, but I didn't have a good time on this game. I didn't feel like it was very well built out. And there was, we found out later, it wasn't built out. They spent very little time on it. It was a cash grab.
Yeah,
this game has been in development for much longer.
Yeah, and the big thing with this one is that there will be a true campaign. There was never a true campaign in the other one, which is something that I felt was missing.
I'm actually far more interested in a campaign than in the multiplayer.
Yes, me too. Personally. I like stories.
How about the story? Yeah.
Yeah, I like stories. And obviously, if it's Star Wars, hopefully the story is good. There was the alpha that was going on, and somebody found in the alpha a list of what the heroes will be, the heroes that you'll be able to play. So there's a lot of them. And I think it's pretty much everybody that you would expect. I don't think there's anybody really missing.
There's only one that's not really missing. I mean, you could come up with people, but the only interesting bit to me was this Iden Versio or however you want to pronounce it. This was somebody that I'd never heard of, and it looks like this character was invented basically for this game.
Yeah, so I think that might be this part of the story.
Yeah, she's a Imperial Stormtrooper Special Forces character.
Nice. This is all posted on Reddit, and the same user also gave us a rundown of the weapons and abilities of the character. So if you're really interested in that, we have that link as well. So
cool.
You know, dude, it's like summertime comes, and then like getting, you know, halfway through summer, we get like games that are going to be coming out, because like this is like summer,
we're in the pre-build
season. Yeah, I know, like summer is like I want to enjoy being outside, but then like end of summer comes and it's like there's awesome games that I'm going to spend a lot of time on.
And every year now is like there's a Star Wars coming at the end of the year, right? Every year basically. So
yeah, you're really pumped about that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, well, in the games and everything, it's just
There's a lot of cool.
We're stacking cool stuff up.
I know this is. I haven't really followed. I don't know when Quake is Quake out yet.
Ooh, I don't know.
I haven't been following games lately.
For that, yeah. I don't think it is.
Yeah. So we have. I believe it comes out.
Quake Champions.
I think it comes out next year. I forget when that comes out.
Oh, 2017.
Does it say when it will be available?
Initial release 2017.
This is how bad we haven't followed games because it's been summertime.
Let's see. April. I listened to a gaming podcast, but they haven't talked about Quake Champions since the beta ended.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it exactly.
Yeah, so it's still in beta. Because if you go to
the website, is it closed beta now?
I think it's... Yeah, it's closed.
Because that open beta closed, I know that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It was pretty well built, though.
Yeah, no, I liked it. It's super fast, which I like games. I like Twitch, like super. You gotta like, you know.
You gotta think ahead of what's happening.
Yeah. And the game's built for 120 hertz monitors, which is nice.
Yeah.
So I mean, the thing that we were talking about is just, you know, slowly summer comes around, and then after summer, it's like. There's like new products for holiday season and new games. It's like,
it's really we're building up to the holiday season as well.
So really exciting stuff there. I will probably get that game. I played the original quite a lot. It's just a fun game to play, even if you're playing for like 20 minutes. It's a good game to play. So, and I'm excited about the campaign as well. So hopefully it's good. So that brings us to what we have coming next week as far as reviews, and I'll be looking at a really interesting product. It's not the first HP product we reviewed. We reviewed a couple monitors years ago, but it is the HP S7000 Pro 512 gigabyte solid state drive. And if you think about it, when they first contacted me about this, I was like, an HP drive cannot be that great. but it is based off basically the same controller and same NAND that we had that we see in most enthusiast-based 2.5-inch SSDs. So it's a really great drive. And because it's HP, they have the power to make the price competitive as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice drive. I finished the testing a couple of days ago. It's a good performing drive, that's all I'll say. Definitely stay tuned for the review of that. Nice. And then I'll be taking a look at Rocket's Nith. This is their modular MMO gaming mouse. So if you're an MMO player, this is something you might want to...
Dang, dude, this thing looks sweet.
Yeah, it's really cool. All of the keys or the buttons on the side, I forget how many total buttons. There's a lot.
A lot.
They're completely removable, and they, you know, if you're a 3D printer, basically they give you the thing so you can make your own buttons for the side if you want. You can 3D print them. Like, you can have some buttons active, some, like, it's really cool mouse. And if you're an MMO gamer and you want those buttons on the side, this will definitely be a mouse for you. And it's great because I reviewed the Corsair MMO mouse recently, so it'd be great to compare these two and see which one I like better. I'm still using the Corsair MMO mouse, even though I don't play MMOs a lot. I love the buttons on the side for doing stuff in Photoshop and Premiere and things like that. So I will see if this Nith has the same thing. And one thing I really like about Rocket mices are extremely comfortable. They just have a different feel than a lot of other mice out there. So. Yeah.
It looks like a really good direction for them.
Yeah, so I like that. Those are the two things. We might have some other stuff. It just depends on what all I get done. As I said, I have a ton of boxes here.
Yeah.
So yeah, that brings us to the end of the podcast, and we always talk about stuff we did this week. And Derek, we definitely want to talk about it, is that, you know, you moved into this new place, and you've kind of made a little home theater, did you not?
I did, yeah. I'm still working on it, but we made a movie room. I didn't get my dream 4K $10,000 Sony projector, but I did get a really nice Epson that is 1080p, but it does a lot of really fancy stuff like pixel shifting, and it's just got really good quality that it's actually rated to be better looking than some of the lower level 4K projectors.
Nice.
So I'm pretty stoked on it. It's massive. I had no idea. I should have probably looked at the dimensions, but it's like 30 by 30 inches. It's enormous.
Yeah. How hot does it get?
I don't know.
And how loud is it actually? That's one thing I never liked.
Yeah. It's not bad. Yeah. You don't hear it at all. It's a fan running, but, quieter than a laptop.
You got a water cooler thing, man.
Laptop. I should. Oh my gosh.
That'd be pretty cool.
There's a huge opportunity to avoid an enormous warranty.
Yeah.
yeah. So I got that 125 inch screen. I got my home. I got 7.1 or actually I got 7.2 cause I got two clip subwoofers this morning.
Nice. So,
yeah, I'm pretty stoked. And tomorrow, I finally get my furniture for the room. So, yeah. Nice.
So that now your whole downstairs area, you're gonna have like you obviously have like your movie area, but you have a PC area as well, right?
I have a separate area for gaming and separate desks, benches for benchmarking, and then I still have space for photography studio.
Nice. So.
Not a whole huge studio, but, you know, bigger even than I had before. So
nice. Now here's the question.
Yeah.
Would you play PC games on that screen with a control on your in the movie room with a controller? With a controller.
I mean, it'd have to be, right? I guess I could get a lap pad, but I mean, I guess so. It would depend on the game. It's not that I used to play like Halo 3 pretty obsessively.
Okay.
So I mean, I could probably be convinced. I forgot to get my Steam box. I hope they're still $15. Probably not.
Yeah.
Just stream to it.
You have to get the Rocket makes that. You reviewed it. The Savu. It is. Oh man. The Sova. That's what you have to get. That's like their whole lap. Keyboard mouse pad deal.
That's what I was picturing.
Yeah, I really like it. I have one, so
yeah,
that's what you should get. That'd be a cool little setup.
I can play games on it. It's so big though, like it's 125 inch screen, right? And I think we're 20 feet from it.
Nice.
And it's like being at a theater. I don't know how good the gaming would actually be.
Yeah, you have to think. Yeah,
because it's just so much screen space.
Yeah,
but having friends over, I mean, going back to console days, get four people on multiplayer on that thing, and you're having a pretty good time.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, just for relaxing and watching movies, you have it set up.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Nice.
So, yep, love the movies, had to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, like, if you guys don't know, we don't talk about it a lot on the podcast, but Derek's, like, a big movie guy.
Yeah, a bit obsessed.
Yeah, he's a little obsessed.
I have this whole, like, hard media collection that Bob doesn't understand.
I don't understand physical media.
I have these Blu-ray discs that he doesn't know what they are.
Yeah, I don't do physical media. So, but no, that's awesome. And it'd be great. You know, Derek has been in this process of moving, so he hasn't been doing a lot of writing for the site.
Yeah,
so,
unfortunately,
once he gets everything back set up, he'll be not only doing reviews, but we have some other cool stuff planned for him to do in the future. So we're pretty excited about all that as well. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so I didn't really do much this week. Yeah, just a lot of work stuff. I mean, it's 4th of July, right?
Yeah.
So 4th of July, that was nice. Got to see fireworks and do all that kind of stuff. But just got to get, you know, coming back from vacation is never fun.
Yeah.
So just a lot of work to do, but definitely definitely getting back on track, and we'll have a lot of stuff for you guys. So, nice. As I always say, it's just Think Computers, all one word, in all of your favorite podcasting software or whatever it may be. And we'll have a full show notes page as well, so you can go ahead and, as we talk about the products or the reviews, you can go ahead and click through. So until next week, catch you guys later.